sense.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Fire away.
Thank you. And I'm tuning in to do that, and I wanted to just, I didn't want to just start rambling off with words. So let me get right to what I feel is the most important point as to why we filed the brief. Thank you. Judge, in this case, at the trial court, asked me, well, Mr. Lowe, majority of these defendants have all settled out. Why are you still here? And I'm telling you this is the why I brought this action, why I've spent the time, why it's so important. And it's the same reason I gave him at that time. I said, Judge, if five people are accused of beating somebody up, just because four of them pled out and took a deal, that doesn't mean that the fifth person is supposed to be able to walk away for nothing. And I say that to you, and I tell you why this is relevant, because I noticed in the brief several times the appellee took great pleasure, in my opinion, in noticing exactly how much we'd settle this case for with those defendants. In my opinion, that was inappropriate, and it wasn't supposed to be in there. And I think it's designed to try and remove us from what is supposed to be the point here, and that is what was done wrong in this case.
Now, you've got two defendants left?
Sir, we have two police officer defendants in the county.
Yeah, Massey and Richards?
Okay. Yes, sir. We had three different police agencies that were involved in this illegal arrest.
So what'd they do? Let's say the defendants were left, Massey and Richards.
Yes, sir. Thank you. They received custody of my client, who was innocent at the time, and remained later being innocent when they dismissed the charges against him. And just simply put, the police agencies arrest my client because, honestly, he had a lot of documented evidence against the police chief who didn't want him to have it. And they doctored up a way to get into his house and seize all that evidence. They did, and they transferred it, and they lost it. It was never found again. We sued them for that, and they settled up. They gave my client, after they used excessive force at his house, ultimately to the Orange County Sheriff's Department. And in Orange County, the Sheriff's Department receives at that time all inmates after various police city agencies arrest them. And this is going to be important. So Costa Mesa, Newport Beach, doesn't matter. They will seize people and then they take them to Orange County. And that's what they did in this case. And they'd said some things to the deputies about my client which were not true to allow them to, if you will, view him far worse than he needed to in any regard. And as a result...
But their position, as I understand it, or your position, is that they have a policy in general, regardless of who your client was, of not allowing telephone calls at the hospital.
Yes, ma'am. That's what I was told. As to whether they actually enact that policy for every single person, I couldn't answer that.
Is there anything in writing on that evidence this is policy?
Never saw it. Interesting question. If there's a policy, I can't find it. Haven't seen it. I don't know whether there is or not. I've read that statement in the brief, but it's not cited to anything. So whether they have it or not, I don't know. But at least in this case, they certainly said they had a policy that says that they won't allow anyone who goes to the medical center because of the excessive force used against them to make any phone calls.
Right. Is the County of Orange still in the case?
Yes, ma'am.
Right. So that would depend on there being a policy.
I'm sorry?
For the County of Orange to be liable, there would have to be a policy.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Unless they are ratifying the conduct of the individual officers, so they may have a unwritten or unspoken policy, which, if you will, could be just to create a defense in this case. However, again, the reason why I thought this was so important is because one of the defenses that they're currently using is saying, well, since we did not actually arrest the person, therefore, under the statute, as you well know, we cannot be held liable for violating it, which I think absolutely violates the spirit of that entire statute.
Silly argument.
Sorry, sir?
The silly argument.
I'll move on. Thank you. I'd like to move off that argument then. Then the second argument is, well, under the point of the statute, it says if it's not practicable, which means it's not easy or it doesn't warrant it, we shouldn't have to follow it. And what I think what was interesting about that is that really puts the analysis in the hands of the person who the statute was designed to enforce against. In other words, they should not be allowed to determine for themselves whether they have to file it or not. No criminal should be allowed to interpret their own statute. And this is a criminal statute. What am I saying? They're saying, well, because we may have been afraid, or because he may have been dangerous, or because he may call people and come down and get them out, we don't have to follow the statute. What's interesting about that is that, first of all, Mr. Manley is a former police officer. Second of all, he has no danger whatsoever physically. He didn't threaten anybody. He wasn't arrested for any type of violence whatsoever. But most importantly, you could make that accusation against anybody arrested who comes in your care and say that we'll never allow them to have a phone call. And isn't that the one time when you're gone to the hospital as a result of being beaten up that you should have the access to the phone the most, for the following reason? If there has to be a decision by your family as to whether or not you should receive certain medical care, aren't they the ones, the family, who are most entitled to know where you're at, so that the government just can't come and snatch you up out of your home and take you to some place like no one knows where you're at, and you can't receive any type of medical care, or you can't let your loved ones know what's going on? They shouldn't be allowed to create that.
What's a persuasive argument? What's your next one?
My next one, sir, is that if we're going to say that there are limitations on the rule, which I think is fair, I think that those limitations should have some type of scrutiny that is fair, equitable, and is based on facts as opposed to accusation. And in this case, you don't have any of that. It's just a simple blanket, well, we were afraid. And they said,
but
most important,
in any event, they could have listened to the phone call, they could have monitored it, they could have
absolutely. And
taken steps to deal with their fears.
Yes, ma'am. And even more importantly, if those fears of destroying evidence, which is one, or getting broken out is another one, escape, or hurting witnesses so they can't testify, if those are true, why even have a phone in the jail at all? I mean, they could be instantly transferred to the jail so they don't go to Western Med, and they can get on the phone, and again, they can call and try and arrange for a prison break.
Let me ask a factual question.
Yes,
after he was in the hospital, what time period are we talking about with regard to the telephone? He was in the hospital, and after that, he was taken back to jail?
Yes, close. First, Fountain Valley arrests him at his house. They take him right to the hospital, not much time at all. Mm-hmm. Then from that hospital, they take him to Western Medical Facility, another type right. hospital facility.
And that's where he was transferred to the sheriff's office?
Yes, ma'am.
And then what?
And then from there, he was taken to jail, Orange County still.
And then when did he get a telephone call?
Well, from the facts of the case, if you ask Mr. Maley, it wasn't until 2 or 3 days later. And that's what
after he got to the jail. So what I'm trying to find out was, aside from the period in the hospital, was there also a period in the jail when he didn't get telephone calls?
Yes, ma'am, there was. And
did he ask for the? Does the record show whether he asked for the telephone calls when he got to the jail?
When he actually physically got to the jail, there aren't any records to describe whether he asked for the phone call or not. Only what his recollection was.
But what's his recollection?
His recollection is he started asking for phone calls from the minute he was arrested, all the way through the first hospital, the second hospital, Western Med, and the jail, and was denied access.
Part of the period we're talking about was not in the hospital, was in an actual jail.
That's my recollection, yes, ma'am.
You want to save some time?
Yes, sir, thank you. Appreciate it.
Just briefly, on that last point, is that right?
Your Honor, I would have a different take on that. Again, the record is entirely unclear whether or not he requested telephone calls once he was ultimately transferred to the Orange County Jail. What is clear from the findings of fact is that when he did get to Orange County Jail, he requested that he be placed in protective custody because of his status as a former police officer. Once you're in protective custody, you don't get phone calls. That was an issue that wasn't fully developed in the trial court because the concern was more what happened at the hospital. But again,
And why wouldn't you get phone calls in protective custody?
I think it's the whole, again, this was not completely developed in the record, but the point being that you're in protective custody for a reason, because you don't want people to know that you are in that jail. So therefore, you're essentially...
Well, come on. I mean, he wants his family to know where he is, doesn't he?
Your Honor, that was also addressed in the trial court, and the testimony at trial was that his wife was informed where he was at, and his wife was allowed to send somebody to pick up their children the night of his arrest. He didn't arrive in Orange County Jail until a couple of days later. The time period is really, I think, the issue in this case. The findings of fact clearly state that he was arrested.
Well, is it the county's position that at no time did he ask to make a phone call?
No, Your Honor. The county's position is that what has been developed on the record is that while he was at Western Medical Center, he did ask for phone calls.
Let me ask you this. Is Orange County still a defendant and an appellee?
Yes, they are. They were under a Monell theory.
I see. I don't see in your brief much argument as to why you should prevail as to the county.
Your Honor, I think
did you make any argument in your brief to that effect?
I believe so. I think the entire tenor of our argument is that...
Where did you make that argument in your brief?
It's really the plain language argument. Because there is a policy
in place.
No,
I'm asking a different question. Where in your brief did you argue that the county should be off the hook?
I think it's addressed as a single argument based on all of the appellees, because we're not...
Well, the reason I'm asking this is you make an argument on behalf of the individual appellees that they're following the policy of their employer, which is to say the county. Well, if that's true, and if they were required by law to allow the phone calls, you just hung your client the county.
Well, I think that's the point, Your Honor, is that
that's my point. I'm not sure it should be yours.
Well, we're saying that the county is not required, at least in this case, to allow the appellees to phone.
I think what Judge Blair is just saying is that if we disagree with you on the constitutional issue, the county is liable because it did have a policy.
Right.
Of doing this. What it did, denying him the phone calls sort of per se in the hospital, was the policy.
There is a policy based on the findings of fact that if you're at Western Medical Center, because it is an unsecured facility, this isn't a prison, it's a hospital that's open to the public, that you don't get phone calls.
What difference does that make? I don't understand that either. I mean, in terms of making the telephone calls. If there's a danger about the telephone calls, there's a danger about the telephone calls. Why is it any different if you're an unsecured facility?
Because, Your Honor, there's the general public's there. You have to protect the nurses. You have to protect the doctors.
From what? From a phone call?
And I think this has been recognized in case law, and it's in our brief, that if you allow an arrestee asset to phone call, he can phone for an accomplice to help him escape. He can destroy evidence. He could phone for anyone.
But all you need to do is monitor the phone call.
I think that's the difference between being at a public hospital with the ability to easily monitor phone calls as opposed to being at a jail facility.
So is that your principal argument? That isn't what the district court held. The district court held essentially that the statute doesn't apply to other than the arresting officers.
Correct. And that would be...
Are you defending that position?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I think if you look at the statute...
And where do you get that from the statute?
If you look at the plain language of the statute, it says that the duty arises in two instances. It says immediately upon being booked and not later than 3 hours after being arrested. The County of Orange did not arrest Mr. Maley and did not book Mr. Maley. He was arrested 9.5 hours before the County of Orange...
But the language you just quoted, which is the language of the statute, doesn't say anything about the obligation running only to the arresting officers.
But it also doesn't say that the time period or the duty are provided by that statute starts over simply because you're transferred into another police agency.
Well, it didn't need to start over. You're within the period.
Well, actually, Your Honor, the statute says within 3 hours of arrest. The County of Orange got him 9.5 hours later. So the rights had already been violated. And the part about the settlement...
And therefore, it's okay to continue to violate them?
Well, I think the point is, and Mr. Below tries to imply that we're being unethical by bringing up the settlement issue. That's in the court's findings of fact. The court says that if his rights under the statute were violated, they were violated by the Fountain Valley Police Department, and the Fountain Valley Police Department settled and had a full release for
this. The statute says that any police officer or employee who willfully deprives an arrested person of any rights. So your position is not, as I understand it, this second entity can't be, officers in that entity can't be liable because they are certainly any public officer or employee. So you need to be saying that he had no right at that. That once the 3 hours were up, he had no right anymore?
And that would be the impossibility argument. If you look at the statute, one of the express exceptions in subsection A is except where physically impossible. Compliance with this statute was physically impossible by the County of Orange because when they received custody of him, the rights provided by that statute had already been violated. Again, by the Fountain Valley Police Department, who was a party to this case.
Why, I don't understand a physically impossible argument.
Your Honor, the point being that the statute has a time period inserted within its plain language that says within 3 hours of an arrest. The County of Orange took custody of Mr. Maley 9.5 hours after his arrest. As the district
That's why it's physically impossible?
Well, I think as the district court states, the right provided by Section 851.5 had already been violated before the county of Orange ever even became involved. Now, I think the other thing that has to be pointed out is that even if this court was to find that there could have been a constitutional violation, that qualified immunity would apply, because the statute does not say...
Not to the county, because the county has a policy.
The county has a policy. It's in the court's findings of fact. The
county presumably has a policy, whether it's 3 hours or 6 hours or 9 hours. If he had been taken there immediately, it still had a policy.
Well, I think the policy really is more the county of Orange often arrests its own suspects and and takes them themselves
and,
to...
And it still has a policy. So the 3 hours and everything else didn't make any difference. Well, it had a policy.
To the policy, no, but I think the distinction here is who arrested him and how the county of Orange became involved.
But what I'm pointing out is it didn't make any difference, because if the county had arrested him or if they had transferred custody within 3 hours, they still wouldn't have allowed him to make a phone call.
Right, but if the county had arrested him, then it would have been their obligation to provide those phone calls, and in a given circumstance, you'd like to hope that they would have. The point is the Fountain Valley police officers told the county of Orange officer that received him into custody 9.5 hours later that he had been given the phone calls. There's a form. It's signed. There's testimony to this effect. So, again,
I'm sorry. They told him that he'd been given the phone calls?
Yes. In the trial court, again, this is in the transcript, there's a form. The Fountain Valley police officer that arrested him filled out. And it says completed. It says he actually only completed one. There's lots of testimony about this.
Yes. It's ambiguous whether it's zero or one, but it's certainly not three.
Certainly not three, but the statute says up to three. So presumably if Mr. Maley only wanted to make one.
It says at least three.
I guess it doesn't say you have to have three. It says at least three. If the county... If
he wants to make three, he gets to make three.
Correct, but there's
maybe zero.
Correct, if he doesn't want to make a phone call. But again, so the county, again, receives this arrestee from Fountain Valley with...
But what you just said now is just wrong. They did not have any record that he was given his rights.
That's not true, Your Honor. If you read...
It said that he was given either zero or one phone calls, not three, and he continued to ask for phone calls.
The testimony from Officer Richards, I believe it's Officer Richards, Harrison, I apologize, from the Fountain Valley Police Department, was that he thought he had complied with 851.5 prior to transferring Mr. Maley into custody.
I thought it, but he was wrong.
But again, so that
they didn't have any record of that. You said there was a record of it. There wasn't a record of it.
There is a form that was completed by the Fountain Valley Police Department that states how much time he had.
I'm sorry. There was a form, as I understand it, that said that he was given either zero or one phone call.
Right.
But there's no form that says that he had three phone calls.
But that would assume that the County of Orange knew that he wanted three phone calls. If he only wanted one, the Fountain Valley Police Department wouldn't have given him.
He kept asking to make a phone call, apparently, when he was there.
Once he's there, then the county's policy regarding no phone calls once you're in this hospital.
So it's all irrelevant. This whole discussion is irrelevant because they had a policy, and no matter how many, and in fact, he didn't make three phone calls, and the reason they didn't let him make three phone calls was because they had a policy against making phone calls.
They did have a policy against making phone calls.
Is that in writing?
It is, Your Honor. It's in the findings of fact. It actually cited to a specific...
So I just want to clarify that the whole discussion we just had is totally irrelevant because they had no reason to think he'd been allowed three phone calls, and he wasn't allowed three phone calls, and he wouldn't have been allowed three phone calls. So what's the point? Why did you bring it up at all?
Well, because I don't think that compliance with this statute was required. If you can't prove a due process violation against
issue.
Mr. Maley...
That's a different issue. But you began to suggest that, in fact, they had reason to think that there was compliance. That they did not.
I disagree. If Officer Harrison from the Fountain Valley Police Department tells them that his rights under 851.5 had been complied with...
So you think there was an oral communication saying that?
There is testimony, again, from Officer Harrison in the trial court that he believed that he had complied with it and presumably told...
Presumably, but there's no evidence that he did.
It's not fully developed in the record, Your Honor. I would concede that.
Let me make sure I understand your argument about the 3 hours. I understand you to be arguing under the statute that... if he has not been given however many phone calls he wants to, up to three, within 3 hours, and if there's no physical impossibility, so that excuse doesn't exist, as soon as 3 hours elapse, no one is under any obligation under this statute to allow him to make phone calls?
Your Honor, I see my time.
Is that
up.
Your argument?
My argument would be, in this case, because a different agency had him under their possession within that first 3 hours and did not give him his phone calls. Those rights had already been violated by the time he went into the County of Orange's custody 9.5 hours later. So, again, as the district court points out, if his rights were violated, they were violated by the
thought. I understand that, but I was asking you a different question.
I apologize.
Assume for the moment, for the purpose of the question, and then we can get back to that. We can add the additional complication of having changed from one custody to another. But let's assume that we have the same custodian for the period, relevant period, for the purposes of this question. During the first 3 hours after arrest, there is no physical impossibility. He is not given any phone calls. At 3 hours plus 1 minute, is there any obligation under the statute to allow a phone call?
If it's the original agency, I guess I'd have to say yes, because the statute does require the phone calls, and if you violate by a minute...
So your only argument is that all of a sudden the obligation of the statute no longer applies because there's been a change of custodian?
That's correct, Your Honor. I see my time is up.
Well, if you want to look at this thing in the real world, the sheriff runs the... runs the jail, right, in Orange County.
Right.
And these other outlying areas, they just have holding cells. So these folks are all going to end up in the Orange County jail. You've got a kind of a continuum. They're all being funneled there. It's all part of the same process.
And, Your Honor, I think the distinction in this case is having him go to Western Medical Center, a hospital open to the public, and that's when the security concerns and the practicality arguments arise.
And the 3 hours went by.
The 3 hours already expired by the time he arrived there.
But your argument would be the same as what Judge Pragerson is pointing out. If the policy in the Orange County Jail was not to allow any phone calls because people are transferred from the arresting entities to the sheriff's custody in the Orange County Jail, routinely, every day, as I understand it, and probably more than 3 hours after they've been arrested. And so if they weren't given the phone calls before by the arresting entity, that's it. They don't get the phone calls. That's what you're saying.
I don't think that's what I'm saying.
That's what you're saying, yeah.
I think that, again, the distinction here is that he wasn't taken straight from the Fountain Valley's custody to the Orange County Jail.
Well, I understand that. But in fact, the Orange County Jail doesn't have that policy. But as far as you're concerned, it could have that policy with regard to people arrested by other entities, and that would be fine.
I wouldn't make it take my point that far. I think the point would be that in your instance, clearly the arresting agency would have violated 851.5.
But the Orange County Sheriff wouldn't because they didn't have custody of him before the 3 hours were up and they were not the arresting agency.
Well, I think the answer to that really goes to the second section of 851.5 that talks about when you arrive, there has to be a sign that gives you the rights. And again, you're back into a jail facility. There's Penal Code Section 976 that says when you're transferred from one facility to your arraignment that you get three additional phone calls. I think that scenario is, again, different than what we've dealt with.
But isn't that B completely inconsistent with your position as well? Because it says that any police facility or place where an arresting was detained. This guy was clearly detained in the hospital, right?
Right. But again, they're not.
There was supposed to be a sign containing this information, which certainly suggests that he had a right, right? That the arrestee has the right to free telephone calls within the local dialing area and just following people. So that provision is inconsistent with your position.
The County of Orange wasn't sued in this case because it didn't have a sign at Western Medical Center.
But the sign obviously tells you something about what the framers of the statute thought the right was. You have a sign to do something you have a right to do, therefore he must have a right to do it.
I think that the issue, Your Honor, is how clear the law was, or if there's any precedent that says that this right created by this statute starts anew any time someone is transferred.
Let me ask you this. Let's say someone is arrested in one of the outlying municipalities. Some are fairly good distance from the Orange County Jail. By the time of arrest and the time that person is brought to the Orange County Jail, more than 3 hours have elapsed. When that person arrives at the Orange County Jail, entitled to make three phone calls?
If the Orange County is the entity that arrests them, then I would say absolutely
no,
yes.
No, they're arrested by some outlying police department.
Well, the statute would presumably require that outside police department to provide him those phone calls prior to his arrival.
So if they arrived at the Orange County Jail under any circumstances, and 3 hours had passed, and they hadn't been given the benefit of a phone call, or hadn't asked for one during that period, they wouldn't be entitled to one, even though there's a sign up at the Orange County Jail?
I recognize that point, and I would say that they probably would get the phone call once they arrive, but I just don't think that's...
Because they always give them the phone call when they get to the jail, don't they?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, sure
you do. I think the issue...
They have to do that.
The issue here is really what happened in this case.
When they get to the Orange County Jail, does the booking officer say, well, sorry, taking you 3 hours to get here, no phone call?
I'd have to concede.
Is that the policy?
I'd have to concede on that point, Your Honor. There is no policy within the County of Orange to not provide a phone call in Your Honor's situation. I'm trying to, in this situation, that's not what took place.
Well, what's the difference between this situation?
The difference being...
You went to a hospital?
Went to a public hospital.
Well, that's a little ridiculous, isn't it?
It also raises the practicality issue, though, Your Honor, of the legitimate security concerns that the County of Orange believe are presented by having arrestees housed at an unsecured medical facility to be treated for their injuries.
Well, then why don't they just bring them to the Orange County Jail immediately?
I guess that would be a question for the doctors. Presumably there was some reason for him to stay at Western Medical Center for an extended period.
Did somebody else beat him up too bad?
Somebody else who was a party to the case who's also the arresting agency, Your Honor. Again, yeah. I mean... There is this issue of the settlement with the Fountain Valley, and it's in the findings.
Yeah, but that's legally irrelevant to the question now in front of us, isn't it?
I don't believe so, because I think...
What possible legal relevance does it have because those people are out of the case? Whether they're out of the case on a dismissal for free or pursuant to money, I don't see its legal relevance.
I would just submit that the legal relevance is that it supports the district court's finding that it wouldn't apply to the secondary agency because... Like I said, if the right was violated, it had already been violated, and Mr. Mabel was presumably made whole for that violation by the settlement.
So he got, in other words, he got paid, go away.
Well, if that's true, then you know, that's just as true in any tort case. He can't recover twice, and there'll be contribution among the tort feasors or something. I mean, he's not going to get double payment, so that's not a problem.
The double payment issue is somewhat of an issue in this case in light of the... rights, the remedies available to Mr. Maley if he proves
a... Well, when he signed the release, he'd have a provision in there that the payment of the amount of the settlement, he acknowledges payment in full for all of the losses and damages and suffering and everything else that he incurred.
That arose out of the actions of the settling party, I would say yes. Again, that's in the court's findings of fact. My time has exceeded myself, and thank you, Your Honor.
So, Fountain Valley come after Orange County and his contribution?
That would be another issue that wasn't explored in this action, Your Honor. Thank you.
You know, I have to tell you this. I remember when I was on the district court many, many years ago, I had the DA from Orange County, the county council, seriously argue to me that the 14th Amendment didn't apply to Orange County. He was very sincere about it. Maybe he's now running the county.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're all through, aren't you?
One word, it's submit.
Matter submitted. To the next matter, Center for Bioethical versus LA County.